Hey everyone, welcome to the New Insight Podcast, where we will be interviewing the most important movers and shakers in ophthalmology and giving you new insights on the innovations ahead. I'm your host, Viral Shah. My guest today is Arshad Khanani. Dr. Khanani is the Director of Clinical Research at Sierra Eye Associates and Clinical Associate Professor at the University of Nevada, Reno. More importantly, Dr. Khanani is someone I've called a friend for over 20 years. He's been principal investigator on a number of drug and device clinical trials, is a pioneer in our field, and is the recent recipient of the prestigious American Society of Retina Specialists President's Young Investigator Award. In this episode, Dr. Khanani and I discuss a little bit about Dr. Khanani's background, how he became interested in clinical trial work, some of the work that's led to recent drug approvals, including faricimab and pegcetacoplan, and we discuss his enthusiasm of moving these types of treatments forward and the impact on our patients. Then we pivot and talk a little bit about mentorship and our roles as mentors to fellows and younger colleagues coming up in our space. And then finally, I ask Dr. Khanani about what he's looking forward to in the year ahead and which meetings and developments he's keeping an eye on for 2023. It's always a pleasure for me to sit down and talk to Dr. Khanani, especially when we can sit down and record it. So without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Arshad Khanani. You know, I've talked a little bit about you in the intro, and I want to just jump right in. Tell me a little bit about, you know, 2022. It was an exciting year for us. You were involved in a lot of the clinical trials that brought us, for the first time in a few years, new treatments. And so talk a little bit about that, your excitement about it, what you're looking forward to then in 2023 as well.
Thanks, Viral. It's always a pleasure to discuss new things and innovations with you. You and I are both very involved with cutting edge technologies and new treatment options. You know, looking back at 2022, it seems quite far away, but you know, the approval of faricimab was a big deal. You know, we worked on faricimab trials for a really long time. I know you were also involved closely, and having a new molecule that has new mechanism of action on top of VEGF inhibition, I think it was a huge deal for the field. And then, you know, we wanted to see the real world data on how faricimab works in patients in the real world. And then launching the Truckee study right after the approval of faricimab, February of 2022, was very exciting for me. And then as far as 2023 is concerned, you know, so exciting. We had positive data on port delivery system in the Pagoda and Pavilion studies, and then the approval of pegcetacoplan. And we cannot talk more about 2023 if we don't talk about end of 2022, where we had positive data with avacincaptad pegol, the GATHER2 phase 3 study that you and I are both involved with, and I presented that data at AAO, and that was the first program having two positive trials meeting the primary endpoint in patients with geographic atrophy. So really a lot of exciting things over the last year and a half that you and I have been involved with.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing. I mean, it seemed like for the longest time, we didn't have much change. You know, we had the same kind of toolbox that we were working with, and it seems like for a decade. And then over the past year, you know, with faricimab, with, you know, with all these new treatments and potentially a couple more along the way this year. I mean, it seems like things have just really accelerated. So when you're in the clinic, I mean, are you starting to talk to patients about this? What's your excitement level? And kind of what are you talking to them about as we prepare them for potentially new treatments?
I think, you know, as physicians, our goal is to keep patients, you know, excited about future medications that are going to come help them, give them hope. So, you know, for the last 13, 15 years that I've been practicing, we had nothing for dry AMD. And we saw these patients go blind in front of our eyes, slowly creeping geographic atrophy, hitting the fovea, and then going from 20/20, 10 years ago, to 20/200. So it's really exciting that now we are opening up the space to help these patients with the geographic atrophy. And pegcetacoplan approval has changed the conversation with these patients. And as you know, the PDUFA date for avacincaptad pegol or ACP is in August. So yeah, I mean, I had a patient the other day that I've seen for a really long time. And I told her now that we have an approved treatment. Yes, we don't stop it completely. Yes, we don't reverse the damage, but we slow it down. And guess what? She started crying. She thought that she would never gonna see this in her lifetime.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, we're finally giving people hope that for many, many years didn't have it or watched other family members kind of suffer with these diseases. And so it's exciting. You know, while this might not be the end step, this is definitely a huge step in a direction that we haven't gone ever. And so this is, I think, super exciting. I'm seeing the same kind of reactions from patients, from staff, from the people in our that staff our clinical trials, right? I mean, I think they're starting to see the fruits of their labor and people being kind of touched by this, that you know, they've worked so hard on this. And so it's really exciting for all of us to see these things finally kind of come to fruition. So that's good. So I want to pivot for a second, because I know, you know, this is all good information, but I want to take it back. You know, you and I met probably 20 years ago, 2003 or four, somewhere in there. So I want to know kind of, you know, I heard you give a talk in 2021 when you won the award from the ASRS for the Young Investigator. And you talked a lot about mentorship, right? And I think, you know, one of the things that I've seen you do, and I think it's just very admirable, is you've become a really good mentor to people. So talk a little bit about that for the people that didn't get to see your talk and don't maybe know your history. They see Arshad, the guy whose face is in New York Times or the New York Square, Times Square, on this huge NASDAQ billboard today. For those of you listeners that haven't seen that, Google it, it's out there. But for those of you that, you know, that see Arshad Kanani 2023, tell them a little bit about Arshad Kanani 2003, when we first met, and, you know, what you were thinking. Did you think you would get to this place in retina where, you know, really you're kind of at the center of a lot of the things that are happening, and things that we're going to have 10, 20 years or now from now are going to have kind of your input to them. So talk to us a little bit about that, and how did you get there?
First, Viral, thanks for your kind words. And I think the bottom line is the fact that whatever we have achieved, we cannot achieve ourselves. It happens with collaboration. And that was the title of my talk, really, at ASRS, the Young Investigator Award talk, is that we can move the field forward, but we cannot do it alone. It requires a whole team. You know, as you talked about, your research team, you know, us sitting in steering committees, guiding companies to have trials that are meaningful for our patients. So, you know, when I first started and we met together, you know, during residency interviews, and I think the first thing is that I was always interested in research. I just didn't know what kind of research I was interested in. So I, you know, did basic science research when I was an undergrad in St. Louis. And I realized that I wanted more fast paced, quicker results. And I really enjoyed working with people. So yes, I was feeding liver to frogs and doing electrophysiology in the lab, and it was very exciting, but I missed that people aspect, and I really enjoy working with people. So when I was in medical school, I you know, work on some prospective studies dealing with IRBs, dealing with human subjects, and looking at pupil diameters, looking at other things, and I really fell in love with that. And that's where it all started for me, that I want to be involved in clinical research, in clinical trials, to have new treatment options for our patients. But you know what? I trained in a small medical school in West Texas. I had amazing friends, amazing mentors, amazing patients. But that's just a start. You need to prove yourself. And this is for the younger retina specialists out there who want to have successful careers in clinical research. It takes about a decade to really get to the level where you are involved closely, like you and I are, minimum 10 years, I would say even longer. And this is achieved, obviously, first you have to be busy in your clinic. You need to make sure that you have a lot of patients you can take care of so that you can recruit for trials. You need to have mentors that have helped you learn stuff. You cannot learn all this stuff yourself. You know, you start clinical trial unit like you and I have done. It's a lot of work. We make a lot of phone calls to our mentors, our friends around the country to help guide us. And then getting trials is not easy because companies don't want to risk new sites. And that's where your medical science liaisons, your medical directors from pharma, your other colleagues come into play. So I started here in Reno about 13 years ago, and I was just doing medical and surgical retina. And after 2 or 3 years, I got busy enough to start my research career from an investigator-initiated trial. So that's a good way to prove yourself that you can recruit. You come up with an idea and you execute it, you present that, and then from there, you can get more trials. But again, none of this is possible without colleagues like you, without all the team members that work hard on a daily basis. My picture may be on NASDAQ Times Square, but I told my staff, it's all of us. It cannot be achieved by one person. And the mentors play a role. I have had several mentors, MSL from Genentech. She passed away now, Sarah Taylor. She really pushed me and taught me how to run IITs, how to be involved in clinical trials. One of my mentors in Dallas, who was trained at Wills, and he passed away also a couple of years ago from lung cancer. He wasn't a smoker. He was healthier than I was. We used to have push-up competitions and used to always win. And he taught me, when you're going to get into something, do it right from start to finish. A lot of people start things, but they don't finish. And I think the learning for me is that when you finish something, you can be proud of that product. At the same time, it requires sacrifice. None of this is possible without sacrificing, whether you sacrifice family time, whether you sacrifice, I want to be close to family, but I cannot live there because I have a better job. So I think, and you know that well, clinical research is not for everybody. You have to be passionate about it. It takes a lot of time in addition to your busy clinic to be able to do this research. And I'll tell you one last thing. I tell my staff that, we were involved with the faricimab trials, the pegcetacoplan, port delivery system, Avacin Captate Pegol. As a clinical, physician, you can impact one patient at a time. And, in your career, you can do 50,000, 100,000, whatever number of patients you practice for 30, 40 years. But if you help come up with a new treatment, you can impact millions of people around the world. So that's where the passion I have is that I can make a difference for a larger number of patients around the world by being involved with clinical trials and also training and mentoring fellows. You and I both have fellows. And I think that gives you the satisfaction that you are training somebody who's going to impact more physicians. So again, everything is about collaboration, and innovation cannot happen unless we all work together.
Yeah, no, that's, and I think all of that is genuine. So for people listening that may not know you, I think there's no question that's a genuine kind of feeling that you have. And what you're saying is there's no smoke there. And I would say I've seen you even now, even as busy as you are and all the meetings you're going to, you still have time for anyone that reaches out, the students that you train, the fellows that you have. And I think that you don't see a lot of that. And so I think for people that are looking to get into this field and this in particular clinical trials, I think you're exactly right. I think, I'm hopeful that they find mentors because we need more clinical researchers. We need more principal investigators to lead the way, so that us in 2023, we're looking at 2033 and we've kind of passed that along and more work is being done. And then we see the kind of the fruits of that for our patients as well. So I agree with you. And I think just continue to be a great mentor. It's amazing. And for those of you that don't know, this is really just genuine. And so let's pivot for a second. Now you've taken all of that and you've now made your own meeting, right? So tell us a little bit about clinical trials at the summit. I mean, I've attended the both of the meetings. They've been fantastic. Nothing like it out there. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Viral, the goal of CTS or clinical trial at the summit meeting was to have a space so that we can have open discussion about unmet needs in our space, the trial design, the data, and what the future holds. And many meetings you and I go to, they're amazing meeting, but they are meetings where an industry physician who may be smarter than you and I cannot have their input because of the CME boundaries. So my goal was, let's put everybody on the same platform and let's have open conversations, because the field is only going to move forward if we communicate openly with our industry partners. You know, you and I both have many friends who actually were retina specialists, and now they are running clinical trials in the industry. And many of them had clinical, basic clinical research experience, MD, PhD, super smart colleagues of ours who are in industry. And I think when I looked at the meeting landscape, there was no meeting where actually you can invite non-practicing physicians who are part of industry to have their input. So I think that was the whole goal. And thanks to faculty like you and all the colleagues around the country and around the world, you know, we have folks from ex-US who are a big part of this meeting. And I think the goal is to continue the conversation. You know, I'm looking forward to the meeting on June 10 this year in Park City, you know, the excitement about the GA drugs, you know, who are the right patients? How do we counsel the patient? What is the future going to look like? Upcoming treatments, you know, talking about gene therapy, talking about innovation. How do we start, you know, with an idea? So there's a lot of things that we discuss in that meeting. And, you know, I hope, you know, the audience can log in virtually. As you know, it's free for any practicing physician to attend it virtually. And I hope, you know, we'll learn together. And to me, it's a passion of mine to get a group of smart colleagues from industry and practice together to discuss about clinical trials.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you've done and what I've noticed, and again, like I've never seen before, which is you've broken people out of their silos and allowed those people. So whether it's the silo of the industry folks, the silo of the practicing physicians, and you've put them, you've kind of forced them together a little bit to say, look, we're going to collaborate in a way that we haven't been collaborating. And I can tell you, you know, you and I have worked with sponsors where you talk to them about their solution and their solution doesn't necessarily match up with the problem that as we perceive it, right? But when you get these people together in a room, it starts to shape and the understanding. And we see that as better outcomes for our patients and us, right? Better treatments, better kind of approaches to how we manage patients, because they're more practical, right? Because now these industry folks have input from people on the ground and the clinicians that are practicing day to day. And so again, I think it's a really innovative idea in a landscape where we have lots of meetings. This one stands out as something that is actually moving things forward and pushing that progress forward. It's a catalyst for that progress. So another kind of, you know, thank you for bringing that out, and hopefully people that are listening can attend either in person or virtually and be part of that discussion. And hopefully that's a spark for them to move things forward locally. So let me ask you this. So now looking ahead at 2023, what meetings are you looking forward to other than CTS? And what's the data that you're looking for? I know, you know, we're looking still ahead at some new approvals potentially of medications, but what other data are you looking at, that stuff that's maybe more pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the meetings that are always good, you know, ASRS, you have thousands of retina specialists in one room, one podium, really good discussions. You know, AAO, your retina society, you know, those are all excellent meeting. One of my favorite meetings, ex-US, is EU retina, European retina specialist meeting. I find it's fascinating because you get to see your colleagues outside the US. And as you said, the treatment decisions, the patients, the care is so different. And I think now that the world is so small because of social media and global connections, I think it's good for all of us to kind of get together on a global level to kind of say, what are the meaningful things that can impact our patients? For example, you know, pegcetacoplan is approved in the US, but it's not approved in Europe. And the question is, whether it's going to get approved or not, what are the things the European authorities are looking for? What are the things US authorities were looking for? And what happens to those patients that have GA in Europe and they don't have a treatment? So things like that. So European retina specialist meeting is one of my favorites, and not because I really like Ramin and Frank and Anand and all the group there, but it's just a great platform to get that view outside the US. In terms of data, I think all of us are waiting for the two-year data from the GATHER2 study, Avacincaptad Pegol. You know, we presented the gather two data last year, 1 year at AO, and the hope is that by AO this year we'll have gathered two-year data. And remember, as you recall, in the second year, patients who were treated with Avacin Keptot monthly will now be treated monthly or every other month, and then the sham patients will continue on sham injections. So I think trying to see how the benefit of inhibition of GA growth with C5 inhibition can help these patients. So I'm looking forward to that data. And then, you know, of course, gene therapies, are exciting. There is new data from gene therapy trials that we continue to see. So those are obviously the data releases I am waiting for. There's also KSI-301. There's going to be a lot of data from that program, Glimmer and Glow studies and you know, the Daylight study. So I think as a field, we have a lot of exciting things happening in terms of longer acting molecules and gene therapy and new treatment for unmet, needs like GA. And I think as physicians, we have to figure out, you know, what is the best option for our patients. And, you know, not everything gets approved. So I think our goal is to, even if you have a trial that doesn't meet the primary endpoint, you learn from it so that next level, we are able to design a trial for a new product in a smarter way. So I think I learn as much from, you know, studies that meet the primary endpoint versus studies that fail, because I think, again, you know, we have to drive innovation, and the only way to do that is to learn from everything that's out there. And one more thing I wanted to mention is that you and I, you know, do a lot of clinical research, but we learn on a daily basis. And I learn from my staff, and I learn from, you know, younger colleagues who ask me very good questions, even though I'm mentoring them. So I think the learning never stops, and it continues. And my thinking is that you learn from everyone and don't have that opportunity go away. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be another exciting year for our patients and the field of retina.
Our thanks again to Arshad Khanani for joining New Insight. And thank you for listening. We appreciate your time. Be sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred listings or watching platform. And if you're interested in more ophthalmology news or other podcasts, visit hcplive.com and check out our offerings. For now, I'm Viral Sheth. Hope to see you next time to discuss what's new in sight.